European governments are putting the United States under new pressure to back off the threat to overthrow Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein. French President Jacques Chirac today advised Washington to work through the United Nations to get weapons inspectors back in Iraq. But the Bush administration is not backing down. Speaking before Korean War veterans today, Vice President Dick Cheney said the return of inspectors alone would not ensure the disarmament of the Iraqi regime. As NPR's Tom Gelton reports, a war to remove Saddam Hussein from power would be a major military effort, far surpassing the first Gulf War.
Back in April, President Bush said his administration is seeking, quote, the removal of Saddam, unquote. With British Prime Minister Tony Blair at his side, Bush then said a more civil way to put it would be to say he's for a regime change in Iraq. That's been his formulation ever since, such as when he met with Jordan's King Abdullah this month.
The policy of my government, our government, this administration, is regime change.
In his speech today, Vice President Dick Cheney said the United States should settle for no less than Iraq's liberation. With the removal of Saddam Hussein from power as a war aim, U.S. military action in Iraq would be far more ambitious than the first Gulf War, which was meant to drive Iraqi forces out of Kuwait. That campaign ended in southern Iraq, well short of Baghdad, the capital. Saddam Hussein and his Republican Guard remained in power. But a new campaign in Iraq, given the goal of changing the Iraqi regime, could not stop in the desert. U.S. war planners are sobered by their assignment. Andrew Krepinevich, a former Army colonel, directs the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments.
The great concern of the American Army is not how do I defeat the Republican Guard out in the open. I mean, either we can do it or the Air Force can do it, and we can do it handily. It's what happens if and when we get to Baghdad and Saddam Hussein is not gone yet. And how do we take that city without destroying it? How do we take that city without killing a lot of innocent people?
Recent U.S. military engagements have had limited aims, such as ending ethnic cleansing. Even in Afghanistan, the Bush administration was originally willing to allow the Taliban to remain in power as long as the Al-Qaeda terrorist network was destroyed. Military planners see a war to change a regime as a maximal effort. Until last year, the U.S. military was theoretically set up to handle two such wars simultaneously in different theaters of operation, but Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld decided that, as an organizing principle, that goal was too demanding, a point he made before a military audience last January.
We decided to move away from the two major theater war construct for sizing our forces, an approach that called for maintaining two massive occupation forces capable of marching on and occupying capitals of two aggressors at the same time and changing their regimes.
Under the Pentagon's current organizing formula, the U.S. military should be capable of defeating two enemies simultaneously, but should aim only at overthrowing one regime, leaving the second in power, at least temporarily. The narrowing of the formula reflects an awareness of how challenging it is, from a military point of view, to fight a war with the goal of overthrowing a government. Michael O'Hanlon, a military analyst at the Brookings Institution, says a war aimed at regime change in Iraq would demand a bigger force with more specialized fighting units than a more limited campaign would require.
We need to be prepared for seizing major parts of Baghdad, not necessarily every apartment building or every street, but the major government buildings, major military headquarters, major television and radio transmitters, command and control centers. These are the sorts of things that you have to do in order to control a country. It's the sort of thing that would deny Saddam any ability to maintain control over his military and over his population.
Taking control of Baghdad, O'Hanlon says, would require either an invasion force sufficient to overwhelm any resistance or else a series of helicopter raids to seize specific buildings one at a time.
Either way, you're talking about fighting in close proximity to the enemy when the enemy has the advantage of hiding behind buildings, inside of basements, interspersing itself with civilian populations. And it means that we're often going to be the victims of ambush or of the enemy getting the first shot at us, in contrast to Desert Storm, when we could usually operate outside the range of enemy weapons with our airplanes and our tanks.
Another feature of a campaign aimed at overthrowing a government is that it is by necessity open-ended. Secretary Rumsfeld, describing the regime change formula last year, said it requires an occupation force. In the case of Iraq, that U.S. occupation force would need to be large enough and well enough armed to maintain peace and stability in a country divided among rival ethnic and religious groups and threatened by its neighbors. The examples of Japan and Germany after the Second World War, Russia's experience in Chechnya, and American commitments in Bosnia, Kosovo, and Afghanistan suggest the U.S. military would need to be willing to stay in Iraq for years to come. Tom Gelton, NPR News, Washington.